This second experiment is the laser reflector.
Vacuum flashing.
Fringe elements of science. More in terms of holes and looking for patterns of connections, networks.
We found that getting them down produced no significant problems.
Series of important observations to artificially reproduce the light of the aurora and to present science with a summary of new and incontestable facts.
Or to opening ourselves to phenomena that don't fit into our preconceived notions.
Welcome to a new Solari Future Science report. One that has an ambitious topic, but hopefully will be fun and not least educating. We will speak about dimensions and space. And my hope is that at least some of you will have that aha experience that will change your perception for good. We will first develop the basics of geometry in higher dimensions using the regular polyhedra of 3D, and from there take a look at how extra dimensions of space play a significant role in cosmology, neurology, and physics. This report should be viewed, if possible, not only listened to, as the visuals are most helpful in transmitting the information. So why should we be interested in hyperdimensions? Isn't that a topic just for the scientists, for the mathematicians? What purpose, what intelligence is there for us to live our lives in a free and inspired way by thinking about hyperdimensions? Isn't that a bit far out? And besides, it is extremely difficult to think in or even about hyperdimensions. I don't think I can wrap my mind around hyperspace. What's that? Sounds a bit esoteric. But what if we realized that hyperspace is in fact everywhere, around us, in every event of our lives, in every thought process of our brain, in every particle of matter, in every transfer of energy and information? All of modern science is based on the use of higher dimensions. Relativity theory, next to quantum mechanics, the most fundamental modern theory of physics, was possible because an additional dimension had been added. Einstein essentially formulated field equations that geometrically incorporated or described gravity. Gravity here is identified as a geometric property of a four-dimensional space-time. By treating three-dimensional space and one-dimensional time as a four-dimensional space-time continuum, relativity theory is able to accurately describe the action of gravity. Gravity, being a very long-range force of interaction, is therefore showing us the structure of the universe itself, the geometry of the universe. And relativity theory describes the large-scale structures in the cosmos and large-scale masses, while the second 20th century theory that is fundamental in our modern-day physics, quantum theory, describes the interaction of the smallest particles and smallest areas. All attempts at unifying gravity with electromagnetism and the other nuclear forces so far have been unfruitful. That is the search for quantum gravity, or for a famous theory of everything. It is interesting that it is at events of physics of the highest energies that neither of these theories work sufficiently, and therefore physicists continue to look for alternatives that can unite all forces. The so-called standard model has come to its limits, and scientists feel it needs to be extended. And the unification with gravity has not been achieved. Despite the last-minute discovery or measurement of gravitational waves in 2016 based on trillions of dollars of funding, it's become more and more clear that the standard theories are insufficient. For many years, string theory has been touted as the best candidate for unification, but has failed, as more and more physicists will admit. In all of this, however, there is a common element, namely the need for the introduction of one or more additional dimensions. Einstein succeeded to describe gravity by combining traditional three dimensions of space with the fourth dimension of time. Also, all other unifying theories, such as string theory, require the introduction of additional dimensions. In the case of string theory, 11 or more dimensions. Few people know that there had been an early and surprisingly successful attempt at grand unification by Theodor Kaluza, who achieved this by including yet another dimension, a fourth spatial dimension, into the equations. And as he does this, what happens is that not only Einstein's field equations for gravity, but also Maxwell's equations for electromagnetism emerge almost naturally. Let's make our first baby steps into hyperdimensions and learn to train our eyes to begin to see their evidence. There are, of course, many, many excellent videos that show you how to visualize and begin to think in higher spatial dimensions. For the completeness sake of this report, let's do this ourselves. Okay, so how do we get from one dimension to the next, at least in terms of geometry? If we start with the simplest dimension, or the lowest dimension, the zero dimension, we would have a zero-dimensional point. Zero dimension. And to go from the zeroth dimension to the one-dimensional line, what do we need to do? We need at least another zero-dimensional point, and we need at the distance, and we need to connect the two. And to go from the, which is the one-dimensional line, to go from a one-dimensional line to a two-dimensional surface, what do we need to do? We need to have, at a distance, another one-dimensional object or line and connect the two. This leads us to a two-dimensional surface. To get from two dimensions to three dimensions, what would we do? In analogy, we would move another two-dimensional object or surface at a distance and connect the two. So if we do this here, we have a two-dimensional, another two-dimensional surface. We connect the two. What do we get? Is the representation of a three-dimensional cube. In this case, a cube. Now, to go from the third dimension to the fourth dimension, we would think we would just shift the cube, duplicate it, and connect it to. However, since we are already within the x, y, and z axis, shifting the cube in this space does not really leave the third dimension. So what would we have to do? Where can we place the cube, the second object, the second cube, in order to make it four-dimensional, or at least a representation of the four-dimensional cube? It's quite interesting that we would have to go inside of the object or outside of the object
anything that is from the fourth dimension knows things not only from left and right and top and bottom, or from the X, Y, and Z axis, but knows it also from inside, knows it from outside. So to get to a representation of a four-dimensional hypercube, we have to bring the second cube inside the first, which will give us the representation of a four-dimensional hypercube. Everybody has seen this type of drawing or representation. Sorry for the not so geometric form. What we have here is a phase, or a three-dimensional, actually two-dimensional shadow of a four-dimensional hypercube. What we can also see is that as we enter the fourth dimension, three-dimensional space becomes fractal. We have a cube within a cube, and within a cube. So the fractalization of space is a result of hyperdimensions. We will see that there is evidence for space and time being fractal. The fractal structure of space and time, however, also implies that space oscillates. And the oscillations of space, or the oscillations of space and time, are therefore, in this view, a result of hyperspace. These oscillations of space can be evidenced by the fluctuations of the cosmic microwave background radiation. Here we see an image of 1991 taken by the cosmic background explorer COBE by NASA. It's the first large-scale image showing the non-isotropic or anisotropic radiation distribution. Here we see the later image of the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe of 2010, which shows an even stronger indication for a fractal distribution of the temperature fluctuations. This gave rise to many new ideas and insights about the structure of space and the understanding that it is possible that space itself oscillates. It was published in Scientific American in 2004, how the cosmic microwave background radiation observations are speaking of harmonious oscillations in the early universe. Could it be space itself that oscillates? And if so, why? Does the oscillation have its origin in a higher dimension? Part of the intention of this report is to create an experience for the mind to shift and expand literally into hyperspace. So we want to go through this retracing and geometric evolution of dimensions one into the next again, this time with more professional graphics to allow for deeper transformations to occur in our perception. Here we see again the process of moving from zero dimensions to the first hyperspace dimension, number four, for the cube. And we realize, of course, that we are not really seeing a four-dimensional object, not even a 3D object, but a two-dimensional projection of a hypercube or tesseract. But also the line segment is a projection of a cube or hypercube onto one-dimensional space. So what we are seeing here as a point is, in fact, an n-dimensional hypercube. And we can take this further into higher dimensional cubes, all of which can only be represented as two or three dimensional shadows of higher dimensional solids or objects. This can be best visualized using the regular polyhedra, also known as the Platonic solids, due to their properties of symmetry. But ultimately, we may begin to see all 3D geometry or manifolds as stemming from a four or more dimensional space. Points that in our three-dimensional perception may be far away from each other or seemingly unrelated may very well be connected in a higher dimension into one single reality. Each of these graphs or geometries is a cube, but in a different dimension. One dimension, two dimensions, three-dimensional cube, you can recognize it, I hope. Four-dimensional tesseract, five-dimensional cube, six, up to 12. Because once again, in our world, we can only see the projection, or also sometimes called the shadow, of a higher dimensional reality. But we can learn to connect the dots. Much like for a flatlander, any three-dimensional object would appear as a surface only. To us, a four-dimensional or higher dimensional geometry passing through three-dimensional space would not at first sight be recognizable as such. Here we imagine how a hypercube is moving through our three-dimensional space. It would appear first as a point, literally, and become a tetrahedron, grow in size, change its shape, even become a pyramid, and then move out of our space again. What does this tell us about monuments such as the Great Pyramids of Giza? And what does this tell us about possible so-called UFO sightings, where people begin to see objects changing shape, appearing and disappearing into a point? Here we see the same progression through the dimensions, this time for the tetrahedron, the simplest of the Platonic solids, from the zero-dimensional point to the line and triangle, to the tetrahedron in three dimensions, and the five-cell or hypertetrahedron in four dimensions. In more orthogonal projection, it looks like this. For two dimensions, three dimensions, the tetrahedron, the four-dimensional tetrahedron, and higher up, five dimensions, six and seven-dimensional simplexes, which will play a role later on in this report when we look at how the brain works in hyperdimensions. You can see more of the projections up to 20 dimensions online. All of the five Platonic solids are also regular polyhedra or uniform polytopes in 4D. What is important as we walk through the hyperdimensional visualizations of Platonic solids is the realization that these high dimensional spaces are never static. It is one of the great and persisting intellectual fallacies that we assume space to be static, an empty reference frame for objects to exist in. The projective view of 3D being a phase of a higher dimensional space, however, lets us realize more profoundly that nothing is static, and what we see is a snapshot of the continuous transformations of a high dimensional perspective. In a fourth dimension of space, The five platonic solids have their correspondences in these regular polytopes. They are the hypertetrahedron, the hyperoctahedron, the hypercube, the hypericosahedron, and the hyperdodecahedron. The first hypertetrahedron, or the 4-simplex, is made of 5 tetrahedra and is a 4-dimensional pyramid with a tetrahedral base. It is self-dual like the 3-dimensional tetrahedron, meaning you can inscribe another tetrahedron by having the vertices touch the faces of the first one. The 8th cell, the tesseract or hypercube, we have already looked at extensively. The 16th cell is the 4-dimensional analog to the octahedron and has 16 octahedral cells. It is dual to the tesseract or hypercube. There is an additional regular polytope in 4D that has no correspondence within the platonic solids in 3 dimensions, and this is the 24 cell, or hyperdiamond, composed of 24 octahedra. It was discovered by the Swiss mathematician Ludwig Schläfli in the 19th century, one of the key mathematicians besides Bernhard Riemann to develop the concept of multidimensionality. The 24 cell can tile or fill or close pack 4-dimensional space completely. While the 24 cell does not have a regular analog in 3 dimensions, it has its analog of a pair of irregular solids, the cube octahedron and its dual, the rhombic dodecahedron. This is significant in relation to space-filling lattices or tessellations that are related to the idea of the geometry of space and hence the distribution of matter in the universe, as we shall see in a moment. Next is the 600 cell, or the hypericosahedron. It consists of 600 tetrahedra and is the dual to the hyperdodecahedron. The 120 cell, the hyperdodecahedron, is the 4D analog to the dodecahedron. It is among the most beautiful and fascinating hypergeometries. Shadows or projections of it can be seen in a number of places, most remarkably in the geometry of the DNA double helix, which is based on the nesting of dodecahedra. This is the shape that the combined orbits of Earth and Venus trace around the Sun over a time span of 8 years. Here we have Earth in blue and Venus in beige orbiting the Sun. Their orbital difference creates this pattern of space-time. Here we have entered inside a rotating hyperdodecahedron and hopefully realize more and more that space may not at all be limited to 3 dimensions with an additional dimension of time. As we try to focus inward, our minds can change. New connections may be forged. This dodecahedral space takes us to a most important consideration. For with the measurement, the detailed measurement of the cosmic background radiation, the results indicated that space is not smooth, nor isotropic, but actually is structured. And the structure can be modeled as that of a dodecahedral hyperbolic space. This was published in Nature in October of 2003 in an article by Jean-Pierre Lumine and others, arguing that the temperature fluctuations indicate that space has a dodecahedral topology. This means that the shape of the universe seems to be derived from hyperbolic tessellations by dodecahedra, which is an interesting concept because we remember if this is hyperdimensional dodecahedra, the distribution of matter, of stars and galaxies and clusters in the universe may be translating a high-dimensional organization. There's another piece of data in the mapping of the cosmic microwave background, and that is an apparent orientation or directedness of the pattern of temperature fluctuations. It looks like that there is a preferred direction for the energy fluctuations, which, if the background radiation is a remnant of the Big Bang, should not be. Instead, we are seeing a quadrupole and octopole organization of the hotter and colder regions that are aligned along an axis. Scientists do not know what the cause for this axis or orientation is. Could it be the imprint of the geometry of a higher dimensional space? The imprint of a possible higher dimensional space is also visible in the distribution of galaxies and clusters of galaxies in the large-scale structure of the universe. Jan Enasto, Estonian astronomer, finds that galaxies are organized in net-like cellular structures along strings of matter with very large voids or empty regions in between. These accumulations of matter and rarefications of matter follow a geometric pattern, a network of octahedra. This speaks of a certain packing geometry for space that organizes matter accumulations such as galaxies and galactic clusters into certain regions, particularly along the edges and vertices of the octahedral pattern. And we remember that the four-dimensional 24-cell packing four-dimensional space completely would translate into three-dimensional space as the cube octahedron, which in combination with octahedra can also fill space or close-pack space in the three dimensions. In 2011, I had the privilege of presenting at a conference in Cairo, Egypt, organized by the Research Institute of Hypercomplex Systems in Geometry and Physics. The institute works with generalized Riemann spaces called Finsler spaces or manifolds as an extension of relativity theory. The topic is literally hypercomplex, but put in layman's terms, the theory, which is a geometric and arithmetic theory, can explain, for example, the strange polarity or directedness of the cosmic microwave background field, and also produces the apparent guiding geometry that seems to exist in space-time to create the large-scale structure of the universe in terms of its octahedral geometric nature. In Finsler space, the relativistic light cone of the Einstein-Riemann space becomes a relativistic double pyramid. And what is more, a pyramid of the exact dimensions of the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is itself a half octahedron. This is quite extraordinary that we may have on this planet certain buildings that reflect the higher dimensional structure or geometry of the total cosmos. Did the ancients know something about the shape of the universe in higher dimensional physics?
Surprisingly, my scientific activity has interlaced with the interest to Egypt. The last 10 years, the group of theoretical physicists and myself investigate Pinsley geometry, geometry which is more general than that of the relativity theory. It turned out that the analog of the light cone, which is one of the main objects of this geometry, has the form of a pyramid. And not just a pyramid, but a pyramid coinciding with the Egyptian pyramids within several degrees. It seems strange. Was it a chance or a regular dependence? That is why we went to Egypt either to reject this strange idea or to find support for it. It turned out that we could neither reject nor support it, and the question is still open.
And what about the apparent existence of a type of a terrestrial geometric grid with special properties at certain node points of space-time? This is a topic that fascinates me, and I find it intriguing that only recently the mysterious results of high-energy neutrino events were published, which confound physicists as they indicate particles that are literally going backwards in time. These particles were seen coming out of Antarctica, which, according to the Earth grid ideas, is one of the vertex points of a complex space-time organization. To conclude the cosmological section of this report, therefore, let us ask some fundamental questions about space and time. Is it possible that the fourth dimension is a spatial dimension, and that time, rather than being that abstract arrow, is determined by hyperspatial geometry and topology? We have learned that the four-dimensional space-time of relativity theory does not work at the very large and very massive scales, and for events of higher orders of energy, which leads theoretical physicists to think about additional spatial dimensions. Is the flow and structure of time a function of the oscillations of a higher space dimension? We saw that 4D space is fractal, and fractals are the result of oscillations or cycles. There are clear indications that time itself is fractal. Hundreds of thousands of measurements by Simon Schnoll and his group have shown beyond doubt that processes, regardless of their nature, when they occur at the same time, have self-similar fine structures in their histograms. In addition, it was shown by Schnoll's group that alpha decay particles know their position in space relative to stellar and galactic coordinates. The research for that should be discussed at another time, but it leaves us with the question that either protons are themselves intelligent, or something imprints on them the precise knowledge of the cardinal directions. Is such instant communication the effect of a preconditioning higher dimension? And space is fractal as well. Space-time oscillates. Apart from the fact that fractal topologies are everywhere in nature, one of the clearest indicators for the fractality of space-time is the lightning flash. It is well known in physics that light, regardless of the medium in which it travels, will always take the path of least time. And it knows this shortest path a priori, without mistake. The path of least time for light from a lightning flash to travel is, obviously, a fractal path. If space is hyperdimensionally fractal, The light particles would know the shortest pathway instantaneously or non-locally, from a dimension of space that precedes the 3D world. Finally, Nikolai Kozyrev demonstrated that in the observation of galaxies, a symmetry of time-space is apparent, with time forward and reverse that cannot be accounted for in the four-dimensional space-time of relativity. As Kozyrev was directing his telescope to the Andromeda galaxy, not only did he pick up an intensity profile of the galaxy in the past, but also symmetrically in the future. All of this evidence is indicator to the existence of additional dimensions. So now that we have learned to recognize and identify some of the characteristics of hyperdimensional structures and their traces in our own space, three-dimensional space, let us look at some of the areas where we find footprints of hyperdimensionality. And one of the most fascinating areas is our own minds that, according to recent research, are utilizing high-dimensional mathematics for the processing and computing of cognitive events. Ultimately, this should not be surprising. For if space is high-dimensional, then also all of us, all of our full being is connected to that hyperspatial reality. We do not exist in a space that is separate from us. We ourselves are spatial beings, spatiotemporal entities that do not so much move in space, but with a high-dimensional space. And that is the vision that we can take away from learning about hyperdimensions, and that I believe have fundamentally practical implications on how we see our personal position in life. So, what was discovered for the brain? It was found that the brain, observed here in its electrical activity of firing neurons, employs higher than three-dimensional structures in its neurological processing. This is a discovery of the Blue Brain Project, and scientists at the École Polytechnique Fédérale in Lausanne, Switzerland. The Blue Brain Project is working on a digital reconstruction and simulation of a complete brain network using algorithms that combine all of before-going knowledge from biology and neurosciences. So this project is a vast endeavor of mapping all the interconnections of neurons in a biological brain. They made this remarkable discovery, namely, that whenever the brain is active in receiving stimuli and processing information, the neurons that are firing are not just responding ad hoc or based on the intensity of the electrical signal, but rather the firing neurons are forming geometrical structures, combining a number of simultaneously firing neurons into a group or clique of neurons. This was first published in Frontiers in Computational Neuroscience in June of 2017. Here we see the reconstructed brain network or tissue of neurons. And here we see such a clique or group of neurons that are firing together. These cliques of neurons or groups of neurons can be treated as geometric simplexes, which are basically hypertetrahedra, the same that we have seen as one of the fundamental four-dimensional solids in the previous section. The firing neurons are treated as the vertices of the hypergeometry or polytope, and the connections or dendrites between simultaneously firing neurons are the edges of each structure. The more vertices and edges the simplex has, the higher its dimension. In the case of the rat brain model that was used, for example, there were 31,000 neurons that would correspond to vertices and 8 million connections, dendrites, between them, or that would correspond to the edges of the hyperdimensional geometry. Now, these networks of activated simplexes are analyzed by algebraic topology, which is the study of spaces and positional relations within spaces, the study of manifolds, of groups, knots, and complexes. This is a mathematical geometrical tool that is also used for questions of packing and distribution. Think, for example, of the close-packed structures in molecules, such as our DNA. Or think back to the structure of space and the packing question of galaxies and galactic clusters. So when interpreted by algebraic topology, the brain network reveals its hidden high-dimensional structures in terms of a whole complex of simplexes. The simplexes can be connected at the vertices or neurons, they can be connected at the edges, or they can even be connected at the faces or the volumes that make up the different dimensional hypertetrahedra.
If you looked at a movie of neural activity with neurons spiking here and here and here and here, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to detect any pattern in the firing. But when you look at this pattern of firing through the filter of algebraic topology, different structures emerge in terms of which families of neurons are firing in which order, and then more complex structures when you look at how these different families are related to each other. When one looks at the evolution of such a pattern through time, it gives us a mathematical signature that describes this pattern that was hidden in the seemingly chaotic firing of the network. What I think that we're seeing here is a way of interpreting or visualizing the brain's own code for what it's doing. It processes the information, it's encoding the input signal, and then it's coming to some sort of decision. And what algebraic topology enables us to do is to describe that encoding process and perhaps even to visualize the moment at which the brain is making a decision. So there are more and more intricate structures among these neurons that are building up as it's thinking about, it's processing the information, and then boom, we come to a decision, whoop, and that's what we're detecting. We're detecting the information processing and decision-making processing of the brain.
So what is found is that the brain is not linear or not even three-dimensional, but the mathematical topologies employed are usually multidimensional, up to 7 and 11 dimensions. The simplexes are combined into what is called cliques and cavities that together produce the high-dimensional structural information. This seems to build and last until it suddenly disintegrates again as the brain process seems to have been completed or achieved a certain state of decision. As one of the researchers says, It is as if the brain reacts to a stimulus by building, then raising, a tower of multidimensional blocks, starting with rods, one-dimensional, then planks, two-dimensional, then cubes, three-dimensional, and then more complex geometries with 4D, 5D, etc. The progression of activity through the brain resembles a multidimensional sandcastle that materializes out of the sand and then disintegrates. And this is continually going on at any moment in our brains. Let's think about this for a moment. Imagine reconstructing the dynamics of these high-dimensional clique formations in real time for human brain. And that is exactly what they are doing in the Blue Brain project, the modeling and simulating of the human brain, which ultimately is said to lead to better artificial intelligence. But imagine what happens when the mind begins to see its own dynamic and evolving topology, which is higher dimensional, its topology of thinking reflected in that simulated brain. What happens to our brains as we see that? I believe that rather than giving it all over to artificial intelligence and supercomputers, if enough of us can hold that gaze onto the reality of our own brains, that the mind, in seeing itself, will be so totally and spontaneously amplified that any AI will be left behind thousands of years just as it was until now. To me, this is this moment of bifurcation that Catherine, she speaks about a momentary experience that she had in an insight where suddenly she saw this bifurcation. This is a moment of singularity, but it will not lead to the dominance of AI. Rather, provided enough of us can see this, can understand it and work with it, it will change our minds so dramatically as we see the hyperdimensionality looking back at us. And finally, when we see the dimensional topology of the brain network in reference to the cosmological topology with which we started out, and the close packing of space, we may have a cascade of insights into how consciousness may be inhabiting the whole of the universe. There's one more aspect about the topology of the brain or the geometry of thinking that I would like to talk about before we move on to physics and higher dimensions. And that is conceptual or cognitive spaces, which is literally the brain representing concepts much like a space or a location. This is what Peter Gerdenfors, a Swedish cognitive scientist, calls the geometry of thinking. And he's asking the question, how does the brain learn new concepts and learn it very quickly? The traditional idea of the human mind is very much like that of a computer, like a Turing machine, working with logical symbols. But these ideas and models fall short of explaining the speed with which new concepts can be learned and integrated, and creative ways of thinking can be achieved. How do we recognize patterns and similarities so quickly? How do we deduce or generalize from particulars? Gerdenfors says that we can do this because we represent information in geometrical spaces in the brain. As we have seen with the Blue Brain Project, this is quite literally topological spaces, but it is also, according to Gerden Voss, that the brain represents concepts also in the same neural circuitries with which it represents space and location outside. And that is the region of the hippocampus, which functions like an inner GPS system. The hippocampus contains so-called place cells, cells that only show activity or only fire when the observed animal finds itself in a particular location. It was originally thought that these cells in the hippocampus, place cells, represent an absolute map of the brain's environment, of the organism's environment. However, it turns out that the map is malleable, the map is adaptive, is relative. So place cell activity is not determined by absolute space surrounding the animal, but by the animal's own history and experience of position. And furthermore, and this was published by scientists working for Google DeepMind, the place cells in the hippocampus are not only representing a relative map, but a predictive map of where the animal or the organism will go in the near future. Other studies have shown that place cell activity is also influenced or modulated by the location of other animals of the same species. That means that place cells in one animal would fire or be active when the animal is watching other animals going to the same place. The scientists are calling those social place cells. I find this very remarkable, and it makes me wonder if the whole social distancing experiment that we are observing now is perhaps really a giant experiment on place cell mapping. Is the whole mystery of space perhaps mapped or coded into the hippocampal brain cells of a species? And how does the extreme seclusion and separation that we live through now affect our brain maps? We also do not see other members of our species so much any longer moving around us, so we could receive a relative brain map. What does this do to our sense of space? And could it be possible to attenuate or eradicate a species brain map of space and reprogram it? Now back to Gerden Voss, who argues that the hippocampus place cells, as well as grid cells, as he calls them, map not only physical space, but also conceptual space. Our representation of objects and concepts appears to be very tightly linked with our representation of space itself. Now the hippocampus is also and primarily known for learning and memory formation. It was shown that the removal of the hippocampus stops the ability of forming new memories. Thus, all of this show that memories are coded or stored in spaces, topologies, or is memory actually stored in space itself? One organism that has been discovered to use a high-dimensional space, physicists call this a manifold, which is a general term for spaces or surfaces of varying curvatures, is the honeybee. In 1995, Barbara Shipman, now professor of mathematics at the University of Texas, Arlington, while working on a six-dimensional manifold called the Flagg manifold, made this surprising discovery that honeybees in their communicative waggle dance, by which they convey the information of the distance and direction of food sources to their hive, are in fact using as vocabulary of their geometric dance language all the shapes of objects that can exist on the six-dimensional surface. Mathematicians are looking at high-dimensional spaces in the same way as we did in this report. They project the higher dimensional topology onto two dimensions in order to study its characteristics. It turns out that the 2D projection of the 6D manifold is the hexagonal grid, just like a honeycomb. And when you analyze the shapes of possible objects in such a six-dimensional space and project them onto two-dimensional surfaces, you arrive at precisely the variations of circles, waggles, turns, and straight lines that the bees perform. Shipman's father was a beekeeper, and so she knew the various sign codes of the bee language. Bee dance language and information encoding is very likely six-dimensional. The Flagg manifold is also used in quantum physics to describe the behavior of quarks, the constituents of protons and neutrons. Do bees know the quantum world? So we arrived at quantum physics, the physics of the small scales, and again, extra dimensions are pressing themselves into our awareness. I would like to conclude our journey through hyperdimensions with an exceptionally elegant recent theory that may present a big toe, a theory of everything. And I hope it does, simply because it is so beautiful. As mentioned, the standard model, which is the particles and the quantum world, and general relativity of gravity, are not unified realities and need to be described by a variety of different equations and fields. So far, no model or theory has been able to combine gravity with the other forces. But here we have a geometric mathematical theory by Anthony Garrett Leesi that may do just that. Mathematicians are using groups to analyze symmetries or unifications among elements. When we can map one element onto another through any form of transformation, we effectively arrive at the unification of the two. Lie groups describe the shape of symmetrical objects, and the E8 Lie field is probably the most complex of all fields of symmetry. By the way, it took 18 mathematicians 4 years and a supercomputer to make this drawing. E8 is of 8 spatial dimensions with 240 degrees of freedom or symmetry. That gives 248 mathematical dimensions. These can be seen as the 248 points or intersections on the geometry of E8. This representation, of course, is not eight-dimensional in the way we can see it, but was projected from the eighth dimension to the fourth dimension, which then was projected to the third dimension, a process that we can now also follow, in our minds, and from the third is projected onto the two-dimensional screen or paper. So behind what you see here as this beautiful mandala, you actually have an eight-dimensional reality of symmetry. This now relates to particle physics, and for the first time also to the inclusion or unification of gravity. For the 248 points or dimensions or degrees of freedom, allow for a mapping of the 224 known particles and forces in standard physics. We have four forces: the electromagnetic, the weak, the strong, and the gravitational force. And we have 12 fundamental particles in the standard model, plus 12 of the antiparticles. Altogether, this gives 28. And each one of these particles has 8 quantum numbers based on the charges. So 28 times 8 is 224 particles or numbers, quantum numbers, that need to be mapped. Garrett Leasy found a way of how to map each of the categories of particles with their charges and the forces of interaction between them onto the symmetry group, so that in symmetry transformations, such as rotations, the mappings would remain consistent with how particles interact in reality and with the combinations that are created in quantum physics. Now, what is so amazing is the elegance and continuous perfection with which all particles and all forces emerge naturally from the transformations of this E8 group.
Garrett Leasy's theory of everything unites gravity with the other fundamental forces of nature using this intricate pattern called E8. Elementary particles are placed on each of its 248 points. Red, orange, green, blue and purple triangles represent various quarks, and yellow and grey triangles denote leptons, a type of particle that includes electrons and neutrinos. Particles that carry a force are depicted by circles. Rotating this model reveals how the fundamental forces are hidden within its structure. Leasy uses a star-like pattern to show the relationship between gravity and the electroweak force. The green circles depict the particles that carry gravity, while the yellow circles represent the particles that carry the electroweak force. The blue circular gluons that carry the strong force emerge from the center. Here, electrons and neutrinos fall to the center, forming another star shape. At the same time, quarks and antiquarks cluster around the edges. Within each cluster, the quarks congregate into families of three, with each family member forming the point of a triangle. The hexagonal pattern that Leasy uses to describe the strong nuclear force is also contained in the E8 model. Using simple geometry, the pattern predicts how the gluons that carry the strong force will interact with quarks. And rotating the model again brings it right back to the beginning.
Leasy published his main article in 2007. Since then, a number of physicists and researchers have taken on his ideas. Notably, Klee Irwin of the Quantum Gravity Research Institute, that has developed its own extensions of the theory. Even if E.H. and Garrett Lisi's ideas will not prove to be a theory of everything, the moments of sheer beauty and the light it affords are worth studying it. We've gone through dimensions and spaces, galaxies and topologies, brain networks and simplices, place cells and honeycombs, and into the most beautiful of tools of quantum physics to describe reality. The journey cannot be complete as the subject literally touches the very frame of existence. But I hope we all have come to a realization that it is not so hard to think in hyperdimensions, and that it is meaningful for each one of us to know about them.